Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening to the podcast today. We've got a great show lined up for you, and we're going to be talking about more jobs and bigger paychecks, some of the great economic news that is North Carolina and the last several years in our state, the tax reforms and economic policies that have been put in place by the General Assembly and Governor McCrory, leading to more jobs and bigger paychecks. Very excited about today's topic. But before we go there, I want to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at WhatMattersNC, and you can follow me at Mark Shiver. We'd love to engage with you on social media. We're also on Facebook, What Matters in North Carolina. Go ahead and like our page and stay up to date with all that's going on with the show. Well, last night, Governor McCrory and his opponent, Attorney General Roy Cooper, squared off in a debate. And I'll have to tell you, I was trying to be as objective as possible, but I came away from that viewing clearly believing that Governor McCrory owned the night. First of all, here's a guy, the governor, involved deeply in trying to care for this state, trying to manage the crisis, manage the emergency situation that is the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew. He comes in from that to do this debate. He could have been disheveled. He could have been distracted. He could have been tired, weary. He could have looked bad, but he was sharp. He was poised. He was on point. And I thought he did an excellent job. In fact, I thought he clearly won the debate against Roy Cooper. What's interesting about Roy Cooper is that he has really had not had to do a whole lot except be like a parrot, HB2. And unfortunately, because of the misinformation that the media has spread about that piece of legislation, and because of the collusion that has been cited, I don't know if it's alleged or if we can actually say that it's real, but Roy Cooper enjoying the fact that some of the things like the NCAA and the NBA have pulled games out of North Carolina, he has been instrumental in this whole distraction that is HB2. And it was probably the first words out of his mouth last night after he said thank you and welcomed everybody. And we saw right out of the gate what his strategy was going to be, HB2. And then his line, which he repeated ad nauseum, was, well, there's the governor distorting his record again. And, you know, I'm sorry, but when you have a documented, factual 300,000 net new jobs, that's not distorting your record. When you have budget surpluses, that's not distorting your record. When you have the largest teacher pay increase in a long, long time here in North Carolina, raising average teacher pay to $50,000 a year, that's not a distortion. And so Roy Cooper had nothing. He had no substance. He had nothing to offer except rhetoric. I'm going to be a jobs governor, not a social governor. Well, we have a jobs governor, Roy. His name is Pat McCrory. And under his leadership and that of the General Assembly, in the last several years, we've seen net new jobs in North Carolina of over 300,000. So I'm not sure, you know, what that means. I'm going to be a jobs governor. Parroting the bullet points from the left. I was sitting there in amazement and thought, they have nothing new. He even rolled out, we have thousands of teachers fleeing the state because of teacher pay. Well, that's just not true. Go to the Department of Public Instruction website and look at how minuscule the number is of teachers that have actually left North Carolina to go teach in another state. And see, the problem is people hear this stuff and, you know, it's emotional and it engenders a response. Oh my, thousands of teachers fleeing the state. What are we going to do? Well, they're not fleeing the state. But somebody irresponsible who just wants to throw around bullet points that aren't true, unfortunately, they can gain ground politically because they incite emotion. Well, the fact of the matter is that I think Governor McCrory stood by his record, which is outstanding, and I think he won the debate. Now, it will remain to see whether or not he'll win the election, but as far as last night goes, I think clearly he owned the night. It was interesting, Roy Cooper recently in September telling the News and Observer and the Robesonian that he didn't really think it was a good idea to be saving money in the state's emergency reserves fund. Well, Roy, I'm glad that you weren't the governor making that decision, because we just had a huge weather event here, and likely to be the state's going to need some of that money that the governor and the General Assembly has prudently socked away in the state's emergency reserves fund. So I think what we had last night, in my opinion, I'm not endorsing a candidate, just giving you my opinion of the debate. We had somebody who had substance, who has a record to stand on in Governor McCrory. We had somebody who was basically an empty suit spouting recycled, tired, lame, emotional bullet points in Roy Cooper. And it was really, to me, clearly McCrory owned the night. I think he's doing an excellent job, by the way, leading the state through the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew. Well, today we're going to be talking about more jobs and bigger paychecks, and I am excited. We have been talking about the great economic news that North Carolina has had over the past several months, and a study was recently done which confirms a lot of that. And joining us now to talk about that are Luis DePico. He has a PhD, he's a research consultant with Matrometrics, and also Stephanie Crofton, PhD, Associate Dean of the Earl N. Phillips School of Business at High Point University. She also serves as the Charles T. Ingram Professor of Economics. Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you. We're happy to be here today.
Well, the Civitas Institute has been calling this study, and I think the name of the study is More Jobs and Bigger Paychecks, The Truth About North Carolina's Tax Reforms. And as I have looked at this study, it looks pretty thorough. You guys have done a really, really good job.
Thank you. We really enjoyed it. It was very informative. We looked at a lot of data across a long time period, across the whole country, and it was really a great opportunity to look and see what effect the recent policy changes have had here in North Carolina.
Well, I'm looking at the it's quite a study. It's lengthy, so obviously we won't go through every page, but the executive summary starts out by saying that in recent years, North Carolina has carried out several major changes in economic policy, including the sunset of a temporary 1 cent sales tax surcharge in 2011, introducing a flat income tax that reduced the top rate from 7.75% in 2013 to 5.8% in 2014, and also making changes in the weekly unemployment insurance benefit amounts and duration. So those four things together right off the top, are they equally as significant in impact, or did one outweigh the other?
Well, what you tend to find is it's really an issue of short-term versus long-term. In the short term, reducing the maximum weekly unemployment insurance benefit has had really the largest impact. And that makes sense because, you know, that's an unemployment insurance benefit is something that's going to affect someone's immediate decision about whether to work and look for employment. And what you find are that income tax changes tend to have a longer term effect on the economy. So they're both going to have large effects. You're just going to see them at different points in time.
And in terms of what's fascinating to me, let me just ask you, because you guys are a lot smarter than I am. But when the General Assembly came to town in 2011 under the leadership of the Republican Party for the first time in a century, they were confronted with a budget shortfall of nearly $3 billion. Now, to someone like me, it would seem that to correct that, you would be looking at raising taxes, trying to raise revenue from the citizens. But this General Assembly did the exact opposite, and it seems to have worked rather remarkably.
And to an economist, that's actually not surprising. There's something known as the Laffer curve, which actually shows that even though you might assume there's a positive relationship between tax rates and tax revenues, meaning if you want higher revenues, you need to increase rates, that's not always the case. That once tax rates get to a certain point, you actually find that lowering tax rates will lead to higher revenues. And that's because it gives a greater incentive for investment, for people to work more, put in more hours, for people maybe who were retired or choosing to stay home with family often have the incentive to go out there and produce. And so because you're producing additional income and investment in the economy, you're able to tax a higher base. So it's actually not that surprising to an economist to see tax revenues go up even when tax rates are going down.
Our guests here are the authors of an incredible tax study, Dr. Louis DiBicco and Dr. Stephanie Crofton, High Point University study that the Civitas Institute has been talking about, More Jobs, Bigger Paychecks. You can check this out at morejobsbiggerpaychecks.com. Now, in terms of decreasing benefit amount and length of time in unemployment, there seems to be a causal relationship there between, I think you mentioned in your first response that there's more of an incentive for people to find work. But just from a personal note, I had the unfortunate pleasure of being laid off when a company downsized earlier this year. And, you know, I'm kind of an older guy, and there's not a big demand on, you know, journalists and radio people. I would love to have not been unemployed as long as I was. I had a lot of incentive, but take my situation out of the equation. Is there really a relationship here between people, you know, being able to get work and their benefit duration and amount being reduced?
Well, there is, and that's why most economists don't advocate for having zero unemployment insurance benefits or 0 weeks. Find is that someone who knows that they have a very long period of time or a large amount of benefits that they can rely on, they often will, for example, be a little pickier in terms of the type of job that they accept. So they might be offered a job, but it may not be exactly what they're looking for. And they may say, well, you know what, I still have X number of weeks left of unemployment benefits, so I'm not going to accept this one right now, and I'll keep looking. And so what you find is that by having lower benefits, it enables those people who truly are having trouble getting a job to still have a benefit and still have that support, but giving people an incentive who really could probably get a job to do so.
Well, that certainly is fascinating. I'll tell you, this economic stuff, I have to tip my hat to you guys because you really have to understand it to be able to see the effect of you know, things that cause and lead to other things. And I think it's remarkable, the study that you have done. What did you really look at in terms of trying to come up? Did you have any preconceived thoughts about the way this study would turn out when you started it, or were you just open-minded at the get-go?
Well, we are independent economists, of course. So we try to approach matters in an objective, nonpartisan manner. Certainly we are familiar with the literature on the topic, and we have a general idea that overall there tends to be a disincentive from higher taxes that might lead to less economic production. So that part was not surprising to us, but we certainly were independent-minded as we performed the statistical analysis, and we did not necessarily know what the numerical values were going to be for our answers, and we let the data speak for itself.
And in terms of really academics, I'm reading here in this study that there's a lot of literature that's found that higher state taxes detract from economic growth. And I think anybody could understand that. I mean, if you're taxing businesses and individuals, they're going to have less money to plow back into the economy. But what I find remarkable is the speed at which North Carolina's economy was able to recover from, as I mentioned earlier, a $3 billion budget deficit in January of 2011 and a state health plan that was in disarray, an unemployment program that owed $2.5 billion to the federal government. This happened so quickly. It's to me is remarkable that the things that were done that seemed pretty simple worked so fast. Is that unusual?
Well, a lot of that credit goes to the fact that, North Carolina was very aggressive with the changes that they made. One thing we do in our study is, we look at the changes that North Carolina made in policy and, really put it into historical perspective by comparing what all the other 50 states and the District of Columbia have done. And in essence, what we did was we had 51 jurisdictions, again, 50 states plus D.C., times 16 years. So we had 816 state-year cases that we were looking at.
Uh-huh.
And for example, if you look at, the sales tax rate out of that whole 816 state-year cases, there were only 16 decreases, and only five of them were decreases of 1%, which is, what North Carolina did. In addition, if you look at the income tax rate, there were only 80 decreases, and only 10 of those were even as large as 1%, whereas North Carolina decreased our income tax by 1.95% for the top rate. So really a lot of the reason we had such a, strong impact over a short period of time was because we were quite large with the changes we made, and those changes paid off.
Well, it's really remarkable. I keep using that word, but it really, to me, is quite outstanding. Now, we hear people say that North Carolina has tax reforms have only helped those in the upper income levels. But, you know, I'm not in the upper income level necessarily. And when I look at reducing income tax rates, that affects me. So I don't know where this notion is coming from. You know, for example, individual income tax rate at 7.75% in 2013, 2014, 5.8%, going to 5.75 this year. That's affecting me, and I'm not, you know, the wealthiest 1%. So I'm wondering where this notion comes from. Is that just political rhetoric?
Well, it's really not necessarily just looking at the data. I mean, one thing to keep in mind is that these tax cuts have also led to additional jobs. And oftentimes those jobs are going to people of all income, you know, areas. In addition, if you think about the sales tax is something that affects everybody and often is considered something that hurts the lower income families because a greater percentage of, you know, their purchases go towards really needs, such as food or, clothing, things like that. And so a lower sales tax really, in a lot of cases, is a bigger bang for buck for, a lower-income individual.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the methodology and what you, you know, drill down into to really come up with some of the results that you came up with in this study.
Well, we basically examined the average relationships across all 51 jurisdictions for every year between the year 2000 and the year 2015 for a number of dependent variables. This included economic growth, employment growth, wage growth, and unemployment rate. And we measured the effect due to changes in sales tax rate, income tax rate, and two measures of unemployment insurance, the maximum dollar amount that could be paid per week and the number of weeks that one could receive those benefits. We applied a number of standard statistical techniques ranging from pooled ordinary least squares to fixed effects, and we sought to control for a number of other possible effects that, might influence economic growth and so on and so forth, including GDP per capita, which takes into account the fact that some states might be wealthier where others are poorer. We included also controls for the, for instance, the performance of the U.S. economy as a whole, so that we wouldn't be giving credit to North Carolina's tax cuts, for instance, to simply the fact that the U.S. economy as a whole was recovering.
And in terms of the, Stephanie, you said that North Carolina was very aggressive. Is this normal with other states that you've seen, or was this particularly aggressive on the part of North Carolina?
It was actually particularly aggressive, and in fact, that's one reason North Carolina's gotten a lot of nationwide attention. In fact, we're kind of being held as a model for what a lot of states would like to do. For example, just to give you some ideas, the Tax Foundation, which is a nonpartisan research institute, produces every year a state business tax climate index. So basically just kind of an idea of how business-friendly is a state. And between 2014 and 2015, our ranking increased from 44th to 16th. Another couple of examples, there's something else called the Alec Laffer State Economic Competitive Index. That's a really long name, I know. But it's basically just a performance predictor. They look at a lot of factors to decide, you know, how do they think an economy is going to do? And North Carolina went from 23rd, from a ranking of 23rd, to second.
Wow.
Between 2012 and 2016. In terms of current performance, that same organization does not only a performance predictor, but how is the economy doing at the moment? And North Carolina's ranking increased from 27th to 8th between 2012 and 16. And so, again, these changes really are, you know, being shown how a large change can make a fast difference in the performance of an economy. And other states are really looking to us as a model.
And talking with Dr. Louis DeBico and Dr. Stephanie Crofton, authors of the tax study, More Jobs, Bigger Paychecks, I want to kind of look out into the future. Everyone knows that economics are cyclical, and we have, you know, we have boom times, we have average times, we have recessions. How long can North Carolina, and obviously you don't know, but how long could you reasonably expect the positive economic news to continue in the state under the current economic climate?
Well, the truth is that whereas North Carolina policies can have a large impact on North Carolina performance, a large determinant of how well we're going to do is the fact that we are part of the nationwide U.S. economy. So our policies might always affect whether we do a little better or a little worse than the rest of the country. Whereas we have some control, sadly, the next time the U.S. economy has problems nationwide, North Carolina is highly unlikely to be able to avoid it. Certainly, we can try to do things a little better for us, but when the United States as a whole has a recession, sadly, North Carolina is very likely to also have.
So the fact that the, and this may be a little off topic, but I would think that putting aside money in an emergency reserve fund makes good sense because people know that economies do go up and they do go down and they do have a cyclical nature. And so I think another positive thing that the General Assembly has done has funded the states, you know, what they call the rainy day fund. I don't think that's part of your study, but just from an economic standpoint, is that sound economic policy to set money aside?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, kind of standard thought that during a, you know, the good times, you want to be putting money aside so that during the bad times, you've got that, as you say, kind of a rainy day fund. You know, another thing that will help North Carolina, you know, if we do have another United States-wide recession, is the fact that we are becoming so competitive in terms of our tax rates. That's going to give a lot of companies and individuals incentives to establish their business here in the state of North Carolina. One thing you find is that a lot of states are becoming very competitive with each other in terms of what, you know, what they can offer in terms of lower sales tax, income tax rates. You often hear the phrase that people vote with their feet. And there's a lot of research that shows migration patterns suggest that states with more favorable tax policies have greater in-migration. In other words, people want to move and work and live in those states. And so that should help us to really ride through if we do have another nationwide recession in the future.
Well, this has been really fascinating. And is there a limit? In other words, I think the goal that I've heard some of the leaders of the General Assembly talk about is getting North Carolina to a place where we don't have a state personal income tax. Is that realistic? You know, it's gone from 7 and change down to supposed to be 5.75 this year for the individual or income tax rates for households earning $50,000. Is having no state income tax, is that a feasible idea? Some states don't have one, but what about North Carolina?
It actually is. There are several states that already have a zero income tax right now. For example, there are 9 states, so Alaska, Florida, Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming, that do not have income taxes for wages during this period. And in fact, that's kind of an interesting question in of itself. You know, it's not just what are tax levels that are important, but it's what are the structure of those taxes. And a lot of studies are really suggesting that for whether it be a nation or state or local government, if they want to collect revenue, perhaps income tax is not the best way to do it because it does lessen the incentive to work and invest. And so there's a lot of look at and research at moving more towards consumption taxes. For example, property tax, sales tax, those types of things, as opposed to income. So there's certainly a lot more work that North Carolina could do in terms of tax policy, and it would be very interesting for them to look at not just the level of those rates, but also the structure of what types of taxes they're using.
Well, this is very, very fascinating. I think the work that you guys have done is really outstanding, and I, for one, as a citizen, appreciate being able to look at a study like this and make sense of it. A lot of times, you know, economic stuff is just a little bit over the average citizen's head, but you've put it together in such a way that I can read it and understand it, and I think you've done outstanding work and would really like to thank you for being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Well, it's, you know, I don't know if you know, but the nickname economics is the dismal science, and it's great that we're able to say that North Carolina is doing well and has some great economic news to share.
Well, it certainly is. Certainly is exciting. Go ahead, Doctor.
Thank you for hosting us today.
Oh, you're very, very welcome, and hope you all have a great rest of the day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's our pleasure now to welcome to What Matters in North Carolina one of the principal architects of the tax reform in North Carolina that has led to incredible economic success. Senator Bob Rucho, welcome to What Matters in North Carolina.
Mark, good to be with you.
And I know you've retired from the Senate, but you'll always be Senator Rucho to me, so you'll just have to put up with me calling you Senator.
That's very kind.
So we have the Civitas Institute, Senator, just released a study that was done by High Point University that basically says North Carolina's economic policies are providing more jobs and bigger paychecks. And this was an in-depth study that the folks over at High Point did. And I thought it would be appropriate to have you on to talk about some of these things because, you know, at first glance, the average person might not think that tweaking or making subtle changes to a tax code could have the kind of impact that it has had. But you guys in the General Assembly, since the Republicans have taken over as the majority party, you've done some things on a lot of different fronts that, you know, individually might not seem like a lot, but together have really just incredibly impacted North Carolina in a positive way.
Well, that's exactly right, Mark. You know, to get the proper perspective of this, you need to look back and where we were in January of 2011, where we had a $2.5 billion shortfall in our budget, and we had We didn't have enough money to spend on government, normal government programs. We had about a $2.8 billion shortfall and actually debt and unemployment. It was insolvent. We had the highest taxes in the Southeast. We had 10.4% unemployment. You know, all of that going on, and that is the, was the result of Democrat policies, and they were the tax and spend policies, which they believe a big government was the only answer to the problem. And so what we did, and Senator Berger, and at that time Speaker Tillis, and a number of us in the General Assembly, started the effort, and subsequently Governor McCrory, with you know the Carolina comeback, subsequently what we've seen now is a complete reversal. You know, the problems that came about from those tax and spend policies led to lost jobs. They led to increases in government dependency and poverty. They led to a decline in personal income, none of which is good for any state or any citizen in the state. And so our goal was to reverse it. We did a number of things, including establishing a sound fiscal policy in the state and trying to eliminate those deficits. And the good news is with the tax policy that we introduced and with the other steps in reg reform and education and the like, we reversed those years of deficits to the last 3 years of surpluses. And, you know, our critics were howling about the fact that we would be having significant deficits. And funny thing, what we did turned around into surpluses. So now we have sufficient dollars to pay for our responsible programs like education, the court system, transportation, all of the normal services provided by government, in addition to which the surpluses have given us additional money so we can continue lowering the personal income tax rate, the corporate income tax rate, and it's like a pump. All of a sudden now, with all of the evil that occurred subsequent to our changes, I can clearly state to you today that we're trending in the right direction. And what that really means, Mark, is that per capita income in the state of North Carolina has significantly increased based on the what it is compared to the U.S. average. The Census Bureau just came out within the last week and talked about North Carolina leading the country in median household income for the last 3 years. North Carolina grew at a 22.25% rate in median household income. The U.S. was only 10.78. We basically doubled what the U.S. Increase was. You know, along with that, we end up adding roughly, in the last 3 years, $9,264 per household. That's between the year 2012 and 2015. And now our median household income is ranked 37th from 46th, and it's $50,797. That's great news. Oh. In addition to which, we've had growth for the last 3 years in the in the gross domestic product in the state of North Carolina, and we've exceeded what the U.S. growth was. In addition to that, you know, we have taken off roughly 120 to 150,000 taxpayers off the rolls. Poverty has declined from a high of 18.6, and now in 2015, and that's 15.3. We've created since 2011. 441,600 new private sector jobs, and that was designed specifically to put North Carolinians back to work. And I can't begin to tell you how excited and proud I am that the General Assembly and Governor McCrory have worked so hard to clearly make significant improvements into the economy, and we're on the trend line that we will be the very best economic model in the entire country, not just in the Southeast.
Our guest is Senator Bob Rucho, one of the principal architects of the tax reform and economic policy reform that has really vaulted North Carolina from a position of being a state that was in debt and facing budget shortages to a state that is leading the country on several fronts. Now, I want to go back just to the very first thing that you said, Senator. What was the feeling like when you guys, meaning you guys Republicans, gained the majority? Everybody's excited, happy. We won the election in 2010. You show up in January, and the first thing you got to see is that you're nearly $3 billion in the hole on the state budget. That had to be frustrating.
Well, you know, Mark, we were elated to be there. It was a good time for us, and the people of North Carolina were tired of the old failed policies that were put forward by the liberal Democrats that led us to those disastrous poverty numbers and government dependency numbers and loss of income. And yet, when we took on the challenge, you know, not only did we have fiscal policy and tax policy, every time we turned around, there was another problem. Medicaid was in $300 to $500 million deficit. Health insurance was in the same range of deficit. So every time we turned around, we found another hole that the Democrats were just basically ignoring and hiding. And we've had to fix them all. And today we have an unemployment insurance system that is got over $2 billion in reserves ready for the next recession. And it isn't if, but when it comes. That's a normal cyclical business response. You know, that's exciting. What we also have is a $1.7 billion, what they call a rainy day fund, which is the savings reserve account that handles economic and or natural disaster problems that we need to find a way. Now, of course, here we are. The Hurricane Matthew has caused serious damage in some parts of North Carolina. Guess what? We have the resources to put it back so we can help our citizens. And I know Governor McCrory and Senator Berger are in communication. Everyone is working together to make sure that we, not only for the initial part, which is now, continue with the searches and trying to save lives and protect property so that at one point we can step forward and try to put back what needs to be in keeping our citizens whole.
You know, Senator, it was striking to me. I was watching the debate last night between Governor McCrory and Roy Cooper, and he's been on record in the News and Observer and also in the Robesonian as being critical of the General Assembly putting money aside for, you know, an emergency reserve. And lo and behold, here we are in the middle of one of the biggest devastations, flooding and loss of life and destruction of property from a storm that we've seen in over a decade. And yet here's a guy, you know, who just doesn't seem to get it, that putting money aside is a good thing. And we know that the Democrats, when they were in the majority, they had a $2 billion surplus in the middle part of the 2000s, there around 2006 or 7. They blew right through that, had no reserves, and ended up, as you have pointed out, with a gigantic budget deficit. So I don't even see how anyone could stand on a stage and say with a straight face that putting money aside is a bad thing.
Well, Mark, I'll say to you, and I served with Roy Cooper when he was in the Senate, and, you know, he has, you know, that is just a perfect example of the liberal Democrats that don't even, you know, save for the future, save for emergencies, whether it be economic or natural disasters. They think that every penny needs to be spent. Now, the $1.7 billion, if Roy, and this is what he wants to do, I understand he says, oh, I'm not going to raise your taxes. I'm just going to spend all of that savings reserve account. But he fails to remember the fact, and this is the same problem they did early on and why we had the huge deficits. These are ongoing expenses. There's not just a one-time that it's being paid for. Where is he going to get the money to spend? And guess what? We're going to go back, if Roy Cooper wins, to being the highest taxing state in the entire Southeast. And yes, that, you know, we saw the results of that.
Yeah.
That would be a disaster if Roy Cooper was given that. And unfortunately, the only thing he can talk about, and he continues to bring it up, and I also watch the debate, was the issue of social issues dealing with the HB2 and his critical response to the governor and to the General Assembly. He doesn't have another issue to talk about. The economy is booming. Children are getting educated and reading and becoming getting ready to be part of the 21st century workforce. our budgets are now surpluses, guess what? Roy Cooper has nothing to brag about.
No.
The only thing he can talk about and distract the voters with an issue of HB2, which, again, bottom line is simple. The women and children of North Carolina have a right, and it should be done. It's been that way for privacy.
Absolutely.
And for Roy Cooper and the mayor of Charlotte to take that away from those, they should be ashamed of themselves.
Absolutely. Our guest, Senator Bob Rucho. Now, Senator, in terms of some of the things that you did, and I want to be respectful of your time, but I'm looking at a chart that is entitled Impact of Tax Reform 2011 to 2017, and it says in January of 2011, for example, the death tax, $45 million, that was repealed by the General Assembly and is saving that money to the state citizens. Also, there have been reductions in the state sales tax, the state corporate tax rate, and the personal income tax rate. Now, you have to forgive me, I went to school in South Carolina, but I don't understand how when you come in with all these deficits and you cut taxes, you end up with a surplus. That's amazing.
Well, this was learned way back when Ronald Reagan did it, and you know, and the liberal Democrats are critical of this because what it does is it curtails their frivolous and wasteful spending. We ended up establishing, as I mentioned to you, the $1.7 billion rainy day fund. We got over $2 billion in an unemployment insurance fund. We have surpluses. We meet the needs of the people of the state of North Carolina as we continue to grow on a year-on-year basis, but being very cautious about how much money we spend. Just like every family in North Carolina has a budget, the state of North Carolina now has a budget that you can only spend what you earn, and that is the way it is. Now, part of our spending has been returning the money back to the working families and small businesses of the state, and because of that, we've created, as I mentioned, over 440,000 new jobs. Our goal was to have economic growth and job creation. That's what we promised in 2010 we were running, and here we are in 2016, and exactly what we promised we've delivered on. And unfortunately, the media, and as biased as they are, and people joke and laugh, but the media ignores the fact that this economy is booming in the state of North Carolina, and that's why I put this impact on tax reform and also the information that validated the success of what we've done. Great things are happening, that we're on the right path, and it would be an absolute tragedy to allow somebody like liberal Roy Cooper get into a position of trying to reverse all of the success that has been put forward.
Well, I echo your sentiments, Senator Rucho, in that the media, I don't understand. I scratch my head sometimes because it's almost as if they want the state to fail. You know, I mean, here we are in the middle of, again, one of the brightest economic times in the history of North Carolina, and they're ignoring it. They don't want to give credit where it's due. And it's really a shame because I think it does a disservice to the citizens.
Well, they have an agenda, Mark. And you know, we recognized under Mr. Obama that we've had a very sluggish economy. And, you know, some would refer to it as being on life support, growing at 1% growth. And, you know, in North Carolina, we're far exceeding that.
Yeah.
And so despite what's happening, and everybody needs to understand, we're one of 50 states, and the federal government and the federal economy have an impact on it. But we are above the curve on all of those issues that we described. And, you know, something has been done right. And, of course, the critics will continue to say, oh, you can't do that. Well, guess what? We showed we could do it, and we promised we could do it, and we have done it. And the people of North Carolina are better off today than they were 6 years ago.
Well, Senator Rucho, thank you for dropping by What Matters in North Carolina, giving us some of your time and also some of your excellent insight. I think it's always better to tell the truth about these things. And when you look at the truth, it's clear that the work that you did and your colleagues in the General Assembly have done for our state is exemplary. It's put the state in a much better position, not only economically, but from a standpoint of education and transportation and the whole nine yards. You have done an excellent job, and thank you for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina.
Mark, it's always my pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. It's always a pleasure to welcome to What Matters in North Carolina, Donald Bryson. He is the president of the North Carolina chapter of Americans for Prosperity. And Donald, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Well, in a very timely manner, received a press release that you guys released yesterday announcing that Roy Cooper opposes emergency funds and, frankly, should explain that position. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, over the past couple of months, Roy Cooper's come out and talked about how he opposed the tax cuts that have been done across the state by the General Assembly and Governor Corey. But then he also opposes taking surpluses in revenue and putting that into the state's rainy day fund or emergency fund. He said that to the Associated Press on September 6th, and then he said it to the Raleigh News and Observer on September 7th. What's interesting about that is we've now been hit by Hurricane Matthew, and the state's going to have to use a lot of emergency funds to help people recover from that. And what he wanted to do instead was use that money, the $1.6 billion that are in that reserve fund, to spend it on other government programs. But if he was so opposed to it, now we've been hit by Hurricane Matthew. My question is, what was his solution for Hurricane Matthew? What was he going to do if a major hurricane did hit the coast? Because he was opposed to having such a large, emergency reserve fund. What was he going to do as governor? What would he have done differently? And for that matter, if we do have budget surpluses or revenue surpluses in the state, it's our position that that money should either go into the state's rainy day fund for emergencies or that money should be going back to taxpayers. Why does he justify that as a reason to increase the size of government?
Well, I think that's a really interesting point, and it's so timely, Donald, because you're right. There's 36 counties or so in the eastern part of our state that have been devastated. There's flooding that's still going on. There are people who were actually being rescued by helicopters in the Lumberton area a couple of days ago. And I just don't think that it's very prudent or makes much sense for somebody who wants to be governor to be saying, oh, yeah, we don't need to have money set aside for a rainy day fund. I mean, that's just kind of silly.
No, absolutely, it's silly. And Governor Easley ran the rainy day fund out, and Governor Perdue never built one back up. And thank goodness during those two administrations, we weren't hit by a major hurricane. But what would have happened if North Carolina had been hit by a major hurricane in 2011 or 2012? We would have only been able to rely on federal funds, and any charitable donations anybody in the private sector would have made. But having an emergency rainy day fund is just prudent fiscal management. And, trying to find new government programs to spend it on isn't always, the best policy, which is clearly what Roy Cooper wants to do.
Well, our guest is Donald Bryson with Americans for Prosperity here in North Carolina. And you said something that I think is key. Seems like the left just loves those federal funds, don't they, Donald?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they absolutely love those federal funds. The problem is... it's spending other people's tax money, spending our own tax money, and it's not letting the state of North Carolina take responsibility for itself. Now, Governor McCrory has asked for additional federal assistance, but you only do that after you realize that the money you have isn't quite gonna cover it, which is what we would all do in our household. We don't go and ask for loans from family or loans from the bank if we have the money to cover our own expenses. And I think that's just prudent fiscal management. And we sent out a press release yesterday, to your point, asking debate moderator Chuck Todd to ask that question in the debate last night, which he didn't. The point of the emergency fund did come up, but all Roy Cooper wanted to talk about was how part of that money had been allocated for legal defense of House Bill 2, $500,000 of a $1.6 billion fund had been diverted for legal defense of House Bill 2, but he didn't actually answer the question of why he opposed the emergency management fund to begin with.
Yeah, and exactly. And I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that money has actually been touched. Governor McCrory was pretty adamant last night that that money has not been spent. So even though the General Assembly appropriated it out of the rainy day fund, it has not been spent. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Yeah, that's what the governor said last night. So that would be pretty easy to fact check, which is, I guess, a popular phrase these days. But talking about the debate last night, Donald, I was really kind of amazed because You know, Cooper has had some kind of persona over the past decade or so of someone who would be a good governor, but I felt last night that he really didn't have a lot of substance, that his responses to either the questions that he was asked by the moderator or his responses to Governor McCrory's statements were just tired, lame, old, you know, leftist talking points. Well, thousands of teachers are fleeing the state. Well, that's just not true, you know, and just continually coming out with things that are not correct and are not accurate. And it's really, it was kind of disappointing to me that that's where he's at. He's just, you know, tossing out there these emotionally incendiary statements that are not factual.
I think that's exactly right. And you know, he looked, he being Attorney General Cooper, looked really rattled in a lot of ways last night. And what I got from it is that if it wasn't about teacher pay or House Bill 2, he didn't have anything to talk about.
Yeah.
Which was problematic in a lot of ways because there are more things to the state than House Bill 2 and teacher pay.
Yeah.
He kept talking about how North Carolina had fallen to 41st in teacher pay, which, fine, that's true according to, you know, the National Education Association. But what he failed to talk about was how under the Perdue and Easley administrations, North Carolina had fallen to 46th in teacher pay. And now we've gone back up to 41st. And, you know, what they did was they drained the rainy day funds and increased sales taxes to help balance the budget. They kept all these superfluous government programs that were basically wasteful, and they didn't invest in, you know, actual substantive, roles of government like public education and teacher pay. And now we've gone back up to 41st, and the reason we've gone back up to 41st is because we've had budget reforms in the state, and we've tried to figure out where the fat is in state government and actually invest in state government, you know, the core functions of state government instead of, you know, all the waste that we saw build up in the early 2000s.
Yeah. Well, Donald, it seems that here's what I took away from the debate last night was that here's Governor McCrory, who I don't think has had a whole lot of sleep since last Friday, and out here constantly traveling the state and traveling to these counties where there's a lot of this devastation. He's been on television and radio updating the people, trying to bring a real sense of calm and confidence, which, frankly, I think he's done a really good job at doing that. And, you know, he stops doing that, you know, throws on a suit and comes out here for this debate. And I really thought he owned the night. I thought he was much more gubernatorial. I thought he was much more prepared. I thought that his answers were grounded in reality, whereas seemed like all Roy had was Roy Cooper had was just, you know, well, here's the governor distorting his record again. And I just thought it was lame. And, you know, I felt like the governor did a tremendous job. And I'm not even trying to be partisan here. I'm just telling you my thoughts as an observer.
Sure. No, I think that's right. The words that I used were, I think Governor McCrory was appropriately aggressive in the context of that conversation and talking about the record of what he's done within the state. Of course, you know, we don't deal with necessarily all the issues that that came up in the debate last night, but like I said, Roy Cooper didn't have anything to talk about unless it was House Bill 2 or teacher pay. Now, one thing that I did think was very interesting about Roy Cooper is that when he talks about how the General Assembly and Governor McCrory have cut the corporate tax rate over the past 4 years, he called that a corporate tax giveaway. But if you look at his website and look at interviews he's had with the Charlotte Observer and the Raleigh News Observer, part of his jobs agenda to bring jobs back to North Carolina, as he puts it, is to have targeted tax credits for specific industries. And I think that, you know, he's kind of got that backwards, that, you know, a corporate tax giveaway is when you have all these special loopholes for specific companies and specific industries like JDIG and things like that, which is what he wants to do in his job industry. But, you know, cutting a rate overall for every company and treating every company equally in the state, that's not a corporate tax giveaway. That's just simplifying and cutting the tax code.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, what I've come to learn, Donald, is that the best that the left has to offer, and we saw that in Cooper in this debate, is just, as I said before, statements that are intended to get people fired up emotionally. You can say, well, thousands of teachers are fleeing North Carolina. Well, that's going to, you know, cause a reaction. You can say that we've lost billions of dollars because of House Bill 2. That's going to get a reaction. And that's all they have. They don't have anything factual. So they're running a race totally on misstatement of fact that is, again, trying to fire people up emotionally. And apparently it's helped because McCrory has been struggling in the polls. But I think if people just sat back for a minute and said, no, wait a minute, you know, we've had 300,000 new jobs created in the last several years. I think I better take a good long look at what's actually been going on in North Carolina.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. I don't think that what Roy Cooper is talking about is necessarily rooted in the reality of what North Carolina is right now.
Yeah. So in terms of Deborah Ross and Richard Burr, are you guys still involved in that?
We're definitely still involved in that, knocking on a bunch of doors and sending out mail. I think we've sent out 5 rounds of mail on that now. But we're definitely watching that. It's going to be interesting to see the debate that's going to come up. It's going to be televised statewide on Thursday night. Excited to see what's going to come about with that.
In terms of, I noticed that some commercials going back and forth about this sexual offender registry. There's a lot that's out there that says that she really opposed it, and then we got Fountain Odom saying that he helped write it. Do you know where the reality is in all of that?
No, I don't. You know, that's not an issue that AFP has dealt with in the past. That's more on the, well, it's just not within our issue wheelhouse.
Yeah.
What we've been focusing mostly on is her record of raising taxes as a state legislator, particularly on the state sales tax, but also voting for things like a tax on prepared meals in Durham, along with a local transit tax. And then, you know, she also voted for the renewable portfolio standard in North Carolina, which put a new fee on everybody's power bill. So, you know, what we've been messaging on is that Deborah Ross has just a 10-year history as a legislator of making life more expensive in North Carolina. And as we got to the Great Recession, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010, you know, when Deborah Ross could have helped as a state legislator and been a real leader, she's made life harder and raised sales taxes again.
Yeah. So do you think that how are the people responding? Again, I always like to ask you this because you are on the ground. You're talking to people every day. What is the response that you've been getting? Are people beginning to see some of these things and understand, or is it still an uphill battle?
Well, you know, mostly, you know, her name ID is just really, really low across the state. Nobody's really heard of her. Even in Raleigh, where she was a state legislator, very few people have actually heard of her. And so it gives Americans for Prosperity an opportunity to define her and define her record. And we're more than happy to do that and educate people on what her record's been.
Yeah.
The people that are just adamantly for her are mostly because they're just adamantly against Richard Burr, not because they necessarily know anything about Deborah Ross. But we at least want to give them pause about their support of Deborah Ross based on her record, and, you know, not based on any character attacks or anything like that. But look, this is what she voted for when she was a state legislator. Well, we're not endorsing a candidate in this race, but we're definitely opposed to the candidacy of Deborah Ross.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the McCrory Cooper, what are you hearing from people on the ground there? Are they buying into this HB2 is destroying the state, or do you think they're seeing some of what we saw last night, that those arguments are just really baseless?
That's what we're hearing a lot, but the only reason people think that is largely because that's all the media wants to talk about. The media hasn't covered the economic effects of the tax cuts. When they did cover the tax cuts, all they wanted to talk about was the fact that they expanded the sales tax base. They didn't talk about that the income tax cuts, far, far outweighed any expansion of the sales tax base. And the media, just, you know, WRAL and Clatchy News, who own Charlotte Observer and the Raleigh News Observer, just haven't given this a fair shake in talking, you know, and been really fair in how they covered the tax policy passed over the last 4 years in North Carolina.
Yeah. Well, keep up the good work, Donald. We appreciate you keeping us informed. I thought this release that you guys sent out was really good. And, you know, you can unlike some of the things we hear from our friends on the left, you could actually go to find Cooper's comments. And so you guys didn't just roll this out and say he opposed the rainy day fund. There actually documented evidence of him actually saying that. So we appreciate the diligence that you guys do and all the work that you're doing.
I appreciate it. People say bad things about us, but one thing they're not going to say is that we're not intellectually honest about it. So.
Exactly. Well, thanks so much, as always, for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, we've had quite the show today, and very excited to talk with the fine folks that put together this great tax study that the Civitas Institute has released, Dr. Louis DiBicco and Dr. Stephanie Crofton, coming out of High Point University, a very scholarly effort to quantify and really show in an easy-to-read way the positive effect of tax reform and unemployment insurance reform here in North Carolina and how it has led to certainly more jobs and bigger paychecks. Thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina today. Would also like to thank Donald Bryson of Americans for Prosperity and, of course, Senator Bob Rucho, who was the principal architect of these reforms that were made by the North Carolina General Assembly over the past several years. Be sure to look for us here at freedomactionnetwork.com. Tell your friends. Also, you can find us in the iTunes and Google Play stores. Feel free to subscribe and get the podcast delivered to you every single day. Thank you for listening, and we will be back tomorrow here on What Matters in North Carolina.